are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves, and we're officially 2 weeks into the season. The Minnesota Timberwolves are 4-1. Believe it or not, they are, I guess, just a half game behind the Los Angeles Lakers for the number one spot in the Western Conference through 2 weeks. As of this recording, all of the weekly power rankings on ESPN and CBS Sports and NBA.com and all the different websites haven't come out yet, but you can be sure that they won't. The Wolves probably shouldn't have moved much after a blowout loss to the Sixers, and then on Wednesday, the road loss that featured the Towns versus Embiid boxing match, and then a dominant win over the Washington Wizards on Saturday night, sans Towns, who is serving the first game of his two-game suspension. The Wolves only had two games this week with two off days in between each game. Strangely, the Wolves have played all five of their games against Eastern Conference opponents so far. They're actually the only team in the Western Conference entering play on Sunday that had not played at least two games against the West, and they haven't even played a single one, all five games against the East. And of course, the streak will continue on Monday night as the Wolves return home for just their second home game of the season thus far, as they take on the Milwaukee Bucks on Monday, again without Karl-Anthony Towns. And we'll get more to that here, or we'll get more into that matchup here shortly. Today in this episode, we're going to talk about the Timberwolves' win over the Wizards on Friday and what stands out most in that game. And then overall, I guess, also through the first five games of the season. And then we're going to finish by previewing Wolves-Bucks, which tips off at 7 p.m. on Monday at Target Center. So once again, packed show, lots of games to talk about as we head into a much busier stretch for the Timberwolves than the past week to 10 days was, around Target Center and for the Timberwolves. The first notable thing from Friday's win is obviously Gorgui Dieng. Gorgui had only played in one of the Timberwolves' first four games of the season, playing 6 minutes of garbage time in the Wolves' blowout win. Gorgui was just good all the way around. Ryan Saunders chose to insert him into the starting lineup and keep Jordan Bell and Noah Vonleh in their bench roles versus bump one of those guys into the starting lineup. It made sense to do it that way. It was only the third game in the past three seasons that Gorgui had started after having been a regular starter for, I think, 2 years prior to that. First as a center before Karl-Anthony Towns was on the team, and then he started at power forward alongside Towns for a season. Once the Wolves signed Taj Gibson to be the starting power forward in Tom Thibodeau's prior to his second year as head coach, then Gorgui was pushed to the bench and was a regular backup. Last year, he saw a career low in minutes as Towns backup at center, and struggled. Clearly has been on a little bit of a downward trend the last couple of seasons, although he was still a solid player, a solid backup to be sure. Of course, his contract is massive, and he's not somebody who the Wolves would have been able to trade over the past couple of years if they tried, and I'm sure that they did. But for situations like this, where Gorgie's asked to play a more extended role, more starter-like minutes, Gorgui is able to be successful in doing that. In this game on Saturday against the Wizards, Gorgui not only stepped in and had a solid game, but he had one of his better games in recent memory. Going back to last year, he didn't have a whole lot of opportunity to do much. And in this game, it was him, and then it was a couple of guys who are new to the team and not known really for their offensive games. And so Gorgui was able to do his thing. He had 15 points in the first half. I believe he'd only missed one shot in the first half of the game. For the game, he finished with 18 points and 8 rebounds in only 24 minutes. He was 7 of 9 from the field and a perfect 2 of 2 from beyond the arc, hitting one from the corner and then one from above the break on the wing. He was 2 of 3 from the free throw line, had 2 steals, 3 blocks, and an assist. He was a plus 21 on the night, which is the second best plus minus on the Wolves trailing Jeff Teague, who we'll get to in a little bit here. The moral of the story is Gorgui Dieng is a professional basketball player. He's always been solid. It's not his fault that he's getting paid too much money. And it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure the same thing will happen on Monday. I'm sure he'll start at the five on Monday against the Bucks. But after Towns' suspension is over, when the Timberwolves take on the Memphis Grizzlies on Wednesday, I believe it is, of this week, it'll be interesting to see if those backup 5 minutes are still only Noah Vonleh, or if Jordan Bell plays better on Monday if he's in the rotation, or if Gorgui Dieng takes over that spot, or if it's a dependent on matchup situation, perhaps both Vonleh and Dieng get into the game. Ryan Saunders had some interesting comments post-game against the Wizards, talking about how players can play themselves into and out of the rotation, which almost seemed to be a direct comment on how poorly Jordan Bell played on Saturday and how well Gorgui Dieng played. If Gorgui can truly now stretch his range out to three, then he's made a very strong case for finding minutes here and there in the Wolves rotation. The best thing that Gorgui did after the Wolves got out to a hot start, they I think had a 17-point lead. It was like 35-18. The Wizards called a timeout and then went on an extended run that was something like 22-11, and trimmed the lead to the high single digits. But over the course of that stretch, the Wizards were tried playing a zone against the Wolves to force them to shoot threes and slow down the Wolves' offense. And for the most part, it worked. But finally, and at the time, Jordan Bell was in the game, and he really, you know, for a guy who wants to pass the ball more on the perimeter, really struggled, had a couple of bad turnovers passing the ball. When Gorgui Dieng got back into the game, he played in the middle of the zone. It was almost like watching a high school game where you just put the big guy in the middle of the paint. He catches the ball and shoots a little 10-footer. And Gorgui made two or three of those and essentially busted the zone. And the Wizards really, I don't think they went back to it the rest of the game. Gorgui's an outstanding shooter from 15 feet and in, if you give him any space at all, and he had plenty of space to operate. He's always been, there were a couple of seasons back towards the first part of his career where Gorgui was actually the best mid-range shooter in the entire NBA. And from 10 feet, I mean, that's an easy shot for Gorgui Dieng. So really interesting to see how the Wolves were able to beat that zone and how Gorgui was just entirely ready to play. The matchup against the Bucks on Monday will be a little more difficult, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. A good night all the way around for Gorgui Dieng, and kudos to Ryan Saunders for sticking with him and, you know, and putting him in the starting lineup, trusting him to have a strong game. Before we get into my other takes on Wolves Wizards, wanted to mention that Manscaped is number one in men's below the belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. All right, beyond Gorgui Dieng's 18-8 and three blocks and everything that he did on Saturday against the Wizards, what else stood out in that game? Most players that got on the court for the Wolves, really everyone except for Jordan Bell, had a good game at the very least. The other more notable performances, Jeff Teague would be the big one. After having a huge game against Miami on Sunday when the Wolves beat the Heat, who are now 5-1, and the only loss that they had was against the Wolves, Teague had actually a decent game against Philadelphia on Wednesday, but bounced back with just a fantastic game against the Wizards. He had 15 points, 13 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 steals. He also hit 2 threes on 5 attempts and was 6-12 from the field. Teague was as aggressive as I remember seeing him in a Timberwolves uniform. And granted, last year you can probably just throw it out given his injuries and only playing about half the season. But going back 2 years ago, I don't even really remember Jeff Teague being this, at least positively aggressive, very often at all. Teague was more than willing to take the likes of Isaiah Thomas and Ish Smith off the dribble and successfully, you know, got where he wanted to on the floor, was getting into the paint with regularity, and was, you know, from the open, I think one of the Wolves' first couple possessions, Teague launched a three that missed, but it kind of showed the mindset. Teague knew that he was going to have to shoot the ball more often with Towns not in the game. And he actually had a quote after the game that was in a lot of the game recaps where he admitted as much and said he basically knew that he had to gear up to shoot the ball more often. And he did just that. He got into the paint. He had a couple of floaters and a couple of layups where he got all the way to the rack. He only had one free throw attempt, and that was on a defensive 3 seconds technical free throw. So he didn't get fouled on any of his trips to the rim, but he was doing a good job of you know, using a crossover to pull up and get a little floater, get a little separation to drain a floater. So just positive to see him so aggressive and to see him playing so well. And that needs to continue. Even if Towns is in the lineup, Teague has to be able to provide some offense from the point guard position. Otherwise, teams can key in even more on Towns. And we already saw that early in the season. The first couple of games, Teague was his you know, the version of Teague that Wolves fans are used to seeing, which is fairly passive, and teams were leaving him wide open. And now if he's willing to do what he needs to do and to play fast, and that's another thing that, not to get too far down the Jeff Teague rabbit hole, I guess, but in Tom Thibodeau's offense, the Wolves were walking the ball up the court and barely beating, getting to the timeline in the first 8 seconds, beating the half court violation, and often shooting in the bottom, the last 3 to 5 seconds of the shot clock. And Teague plays his best basketball fast. If you go back to his best years with the Atlanta Hawks, he made an all-star team once, running a fast system. And, you know, if all else fails, it's a contract year, and Teague knows that. He's probably not going to get another $19 million a year. He's definitely not going to, like he's getting this year, but this is going to be his last probably multi-year substantial contract, and Teague wants to prove he can still be the starting point guard on a playoff caliber team. So a good game from Jeff Teague, which was certainly positive to see. Robert Covington had his best game of the young season. He's been moderately disappointing. I had him as one of the stock down players in our last podcast. Covington was great in this one. He had 20 points on only 10 shots, 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc. Made all 3 of his free throws, had 4 rebounds, 2 blocks, and an assist. Only played 20 minutes. So that's 20 points on 10 shots in 20 minutes for Robert Covington in this game. So outstanding that he didn't need to play that much at all. And when he was on the floor, he played very well. He actually got to the rim off the dribble a couple of times, made a couple of layups, defeated a really poor Wizards defense. We're all used to Robert Covington being a catch and shoot player, occasionally cutting to the rim effectively, but not really putting the ball on the deck very much. And he did that in this game. He also hit 2 tough contested 3-pointers in the third quarter as the Wolves were separating. Shots that, you know, he typically, it doesn't feel like he takes very many contested threes. He doesn't really need to, but oftentimes he'll shoot from further out, 8 feet beyond the arc to avoid a contested three, and just, you know, he's open from out there, so just shoot it. But these were threes from the wing that were decently defended that he just launched and made. So really encouraging to see a good game from Covington as well. The other positive takeaways, Jarrett Culver had the best game of his career. He did end up launching just a ton of shots. He shot the ball 17 times in 26 minutes. He got to 20 points, but again, 17 shots to do it. He was 4 of 9 from beyond the arc, had 5 rebounds and an assist, but he did commit 6 turnovers in 26 minutes and was one of only 3 Timberwolves to be a minus on the plus minus for the game. In a game the Wolves won by 22 points, he was a minus 1, missed both of his free throw attempts. So another up and down game for him. He got hot at one point and made back-to-back threes, and, you know, was active certainly. And I think the most positive thing to say isn't necessarily the 20 points, because it wasn't an efficient 20 points, but it was the aggressiveness that he showed, trying to score. And in a game when the Wolves didn't need his offense, it was good to see him hopefully build a little bit of confidence trying to find his offense, as at some point this season, the Wolves are going to need to see him break out a little bit more on the offensive end of the floor, especially. So not the best game from Jarrett Culver, but an encouraging game nonetheless. And I think both things can be true. The last player I want to shout out is Trevion Graham, who primarily was guarding Bradley Beal, at least to start the game. He only played 14 minutes despite being in the starting lineup. He got into foul trouble early. I think it was his third foul. It was a poor call, and so was his fourth, which was early in the third quarter and forced the Wolves to go to Josh Okogie and Jake Lehman a little bit earlier than they would have otherwise. Both those guys played well too, but it was Graham's defense on Bradley Beal, especially early in the game, that really changed things. Beal had 30 points, but it took him 19 shots to get there, and he was 11 of 13 from the free throw line. So he shot under 30% from the floor, 8 of 19, and only 3 of 8 on three-pointers, only had one assist, turned the ball over six times, and was easily a game worse, minus 41 for whatever that's worth, which isn't a whole lot, I don't think, but in terms of single game plus minus, clearly Bradley Beal's the best player on that team, but struggled, had a couple of really poor bricks that he threw up from beyond the arc. And I think Graham really got into his space. And even though he did get into foul trouble, set the tone for guarding Bradley Beal in this game. So positive there. And then, as mentioned, both Jake Lehman and Josh Okogie had good games. Okogie had 9 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. In 29 minutes, he played a team high 29 minutes. Jake Lehman was 5 of 10 from the floor, had 14 points, knocked on a couple threes, had a couple nice drives to the basket late in the shot clock. So really good all the way around for the Wolves. The only player that really struggled is Jordan Bell. Shabazz Napier didn't have a great game either, but in a game the Wolves won by 22, it was mostly positives for the Wolves. Next up, we're going to talk, preview the Wolves-Bucks matchup for Monday night. And go through what you can expect to see in that one. All right, Wolves-Bucks tips off tonight at 7 o'clock at Target Center. It's only the Wolves' second home game of the season. They won the home opener against the Heat 8 days ago. Karl-Anthony Towns was on the floor for that one. Granted, Jimmy Butler was not, but it was still a nice win for the Wolves. And the Heat, again, as mentioned, are 5-1 now. So definitely looking, and they were 2-1 without Butler in the lineup. So still looking like a good win. That Heat team did beat this Bucks team in overtime just prior to coming to Minnesota last weekend. The Bucks haven't really, they just beat the Toronto Raptors, but besides that, haven't really beaten very many teams of note thus far this season. Their wins have come against at Houston, which I guess is notable, but the Rockets have really struggled now, almost lost to the Wizards, just got beat pretty easily on Sunday of this week. So they won at Houston, they beat the Cavaliers, they won at the Magic and beat the Raptors at home. They've lost at Boston and then the aforementioned overtime loss to the Heat at home. So this is the first game of a four-game road trip, and seven of the eight games coming up for the Bucks are on the road. So they're going to want to get the road trip started off on the right foot. The Bucks, obviously, last season won 60 games. They were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference and got all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals before losing in six games to the Raptors, who, of course, went on to win the title. So the Bucks are a formidable opponent. It's a team that beat the Wolves easily in preseason and, pretty much had their way with them last season as well. As things currently stand, the Bucks are actually number one in the NBA in 3-point attempts per game, as well as 3-point makes per game. They are averaging 15.7 3-point makes per game on 14.7 attempts per game. That's 35.1%. They also, coincidentally, are last in the league in 3-pointers allowed and 3-pointers attempted per game. So they struggle when it comes to allowing 3-pointers, but they are also a poor rebounding team. They don't have a lot to speak of when it comes to rim protection or rebounding. The Lopez brothers are both on this team, and those are not their strong suits when it comes to big men. This is a game, however, where the Wolves are definitely going to miss Towns, and not just because of his star power and having to face off against Giannis Antetokounmpo, but also the rim protection that the Wolves are going to be missing. I mean, Giannis obviously loves to attack the rim, and it's a deep team that shoots threes and attacks the rim, and not having Towns to do either one of those things, to shoot threes right back at Milwaukee, and then also to help protect the rim, that's significant, to be sure. The most impressive thing about the Bucks is their depth. If you look at the guys who are going to play, the starting lineup, outside of Giannis, there's Chris Middleton, who of course is a fantastic player. Brook Lopez, Eric Bledsoe, Wesley Matthews. So all guys who have been on playoff teams, a number of guys who have been all-stars or all NBA players. George Hill has been actually playing really solid minutes at point guard. And then Ersan Ilyasova, Kyle Korver, Robin Lopez, other veterans that are going to be in that rotation. Younger players like Sterling Brown, and then last year's rookie Dante DiVincenzo, who is somebody that Wolves fans had their eye on in the draft, the former Villanova star. Now in his second year in the league, has a larger role on this year's team, will probably be in the regular rotation more likely than not as the season goes on. Pat Connaughton as well, the former Portland Trailblazer, will see some minutes here and there in the rotation, although he didn't play in the last game against Toronto. So it's really a deep team. And in some ways, in terms of the wing depth, is similar to the Wolves. Granted, the star power and the level that Giannis is at, as well as, you know, the dynamic that Brook Lopez adds from beyond the arc, is unique, and the Wolves don't quite have the star power when it comes to like a Chris Middleton on the wing either. George Hill and Jeff Teague are close to a wash at the point guard spot, although Hill has been playing out of his mind this year. Then again, so is Jeff Teague of late. So the teams actually match up fairly well outside of the fact that Towns won't be on the floor and that Giannis should be able to do what he wants. And he does most nights. There isn't really any one player in the league that can guard Giannis. And it's unclear how the Wolves are going to attack that. My guess would be that they rotate through the whoever is checking him on defense, whether it's Robert Covington. I'm sure Josh Okogie will get plenty of turns. Jarrett Culver and his length are going to come in handy. And then I would imagine even Jake Layman gets to take a run at guarding Giannis as well. So it'll be interesting to see what Ryan Saunders schemes up in terms of trying to slow Giannis down. I think if the Wolves can stay close in this one, that would be just, I mean, I know that sounds really defeatist, but that would be a really positive turn without Towns against one of the teams that's projected to be, I think their over under win total for the Bucks this year is 57.5. The spread at the start of the game is going to be Bucks -6. And remember, this game's at Target Center. So it's not a, it's not going to be a game the Wolves are expected to win. And if they can go 1-1 and split the two games with Towns unavailable, that'll be considered a win for the Wolves. And if they can somehow come out of this game at home against the Bucks with a win, that would be fantastic. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. We'll be back on Tuesday morning with a recap podcast of Monday night's game against the Bucks. Hopefully it'll be a Timberwolves win, and the Wolves will hopefully be improving to 5-1 on the season. So we'll break down the stars from the game, the key takeaways, and maybe a little bit of stock up and stock down since it's been three games since we did our last one. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.